We are sitting in worship. We are sitting in expectant waiting because we expect when we are together that God will somehow make himself, herself, themselves understood to someone who can then get up and give a message that will help all of us.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Today on In Good Faith, we're starting our mini-series on contemplative practice, prayer, and worship. And I'm really excited today to introduce you to a couple who for 40 years who have been Quakers, or as we should better say, members of the Society of Friends, meeting in Sandy Spring, Maryland. In studio with me is senior producer Heather Bigley.
Hello.
And producer Aaliyah Ebert.
Hey, everyone.
Aaliyah, what should we be listening for when we talk to Rich and Joan?
I would listen for the experiences in their lives that led them to this kind of silent worship.
Joan and Rich Sliversidge are convinced friends, and as Steve said, they have been worshiping with the Religious Society of Friends since 1981 in a place in Sandy Spring, Maryland, where Quakers have worshiped for over 200 years, which I think is just astounding and lovely to think about. And they've also visited and worked with Quakers from around the U.S., as well as the United Kingdom and Kenya.
So I attended this meeting. I didn't tell anyone I was coming. I saw this building that had been built. I mean, the congregation has been there since the 1700s. This building was from the 1800s. And we walked in and we sat. And the first thing I heard was, today we will have an hour of silent worship. And I thought, oh boy. And so my first question to Rich and Joan was about how they do this. Contemplative silent worship.
There is a misconception that we sit in silence because that's how it looks to somebody who hasn't been doing it for a while.
Or doesn't understand what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
We are sitting in worship. We are sitting in expectant waiting because we expect when we are together that God will somehow make himself, herself, themselves understood to someone who can then get up and give a message that will help all of us.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Maybe. And it happens sometimes. We were in another meeting one time. Friends of ours who were Iowa corn farmers, were lovely people. And when Roy retired, he started whittling. He would whittle little red cedar replicas of a corn kernel. Mm. And for a few of us who we felt especially close to, he gave them to us and we had them.
And so they're like worry stones. You can rub them and hold them and find comfort. And
I had given one or two messages about the corn kernels, and there was usually somebody who had reacted. This is over the last couple of years before this. And I had the sense that I ought to be giving a message about the corn kernels in this meeting for worship. And I was arguing with God, if you will, saying, no, I've done that. I don't want to do it again. I've done it twice. And finally I said, okay, then I have to describe something that's different about it this time if I'm going to do this. So I stood and gave a message about how when Roy made these, by giving them to a group of us, he was connecting us to one another. And that was kind of what had happened with this. And then I sat down and that was my message. And the meeting went on for a while and it was done. Except that then someone else stood up toward the end and said, Roy gave me one too. And it saved my life. And then he described about how he had been in a marriage where his wife had left him and he was really depressed. And he went to a Quaker retreat center, Pendle Hill, where Roy and Martha were, and connected with them. And Roy gave him a corn kernel. And I had no idea who this person was or what effect would it that it had. It just went out there. That's what happens when you give a message that is helpful to somebody else.
I'm also impressed with the comfort that the congregation feels in silence. The second meeting I went to was not just an entire hour of silent worship, but it was more, as you've described, if people felt moved to share a thought or a testimony, they would. But there was no rush to fill the time, and no one sat there like, oh, someone's got to fill this. It seemed very relaxed, like someone may not, and we're all good with that.
So when somebody gives a message, it's called vocal ministry. And when is it appropriate in it, and when is it not appropriate? Mm. It's supposed to be grounded and spiritually deepened. And that's why usually there's no messages in the first 15 or 20 minutes, because everybody there is trying to ground themselves, plug in, if you will, to that light, that inward teacher, that light, to see if there is a message bubbling up.
Our worship services really vary. We are the unprogrammed branch of Quakers, but we are actually in the minority. We're less than 20% probably of all Quakers. Yep. Programmed meetings in other areas, there are semi-programmed meetings where you have periods of silent worship and periods where there might be sermons, something going on.
Vocal prayer.
So there are different structures depending on the branch of Quakers. And for 12 years, I was on the board and a trustee of one of the umbrella Quaker organizations, Friends United Meeting, which is here in the U.S. as well as East Africa and a few places in the Caribbean. So it is a very ethnically diverse group. Half of us, I mean, there are more Quakers in Kenya than there are in the United States, for instance. And all of them, or virtually all of them, are programmed. So they have choirs, they have singing, they have sermons, pastors. Pastors tend to be trained in Kenya.
I'm really interested in contemplative prayer and worship. For you, Joan, what do you think? What do you feel? Where do you focus in worship? And maybe that's changed over the years.
It has definitely changed. I am an extrovert, and so I came to Quakerism in my late 30s, early 40s as this extrovert who talks a lot. So the first lesson was how to just quiet my mind and quiet my soul and then be open to what is present in the moment. We have this wonderful picture depicting the spirit of Christ, like in an apparition who is standing over a gathered meeting. But if my mind is running and I can't get in touch with that. So that was the first big lesson that I guess I had to learn. And over the years, I've become much more of an introvert. I'm much more quiet than I used to be. And lately, I have been worshiping in centering prayer, practicing centering prayer. Centering prayer, according to the people that I've been learning from, goes back for centuries, thousands of years. And almost every religious faith community has a form of centering prayer. It's contemplative prayer. Centering prayer is a particular approach that is based on self-emptying. And that, according to the gospel and a lot of gospel scholars, is what Jesus did so well. He self-emptied. He was selfless. I mean, dying on the cross, he was selfless. And he turned his whole body and soul over to God. So when I go to meeting for worship now, I spend the first 15 or 20 minutes in centering prayer, in that self-emptying.
Is that just being consciously in the presence of God?
Yes, yes. Be constantly in the presence. And there, the teaching is to have a sacred word that you return to, so that when our minds, our monkey minds start going and whatever, we get fidgety, you just keep coming back to that sacred word without judging yourself. That's the key, which is really hard for most of us who share with each other what this is like, because the judgment is so built in that I'm not doing it right. So to be non-judgmental of yourself, which also means I'm more likely to be non-judgmental for others.
A nice side effect.
Yes, exactly. So that's what that contemplative, and this is, you know, after 40 plus years of so I'm continually growing and changing about what it means.
Which keeps your faith alive, I think.
Yep.
That's beautiful. Well, this is so lovely to speak with you. I have my notebook here that I had with me. And when I found out we were doing an hour, I thought, well, I should be able to do this. I mean, I've meditated for 10, 15 minutes at a time. I thought, I'm up for the experience. But I did take a moment at one point, I think about 15 minutes, and I thought, well, maybe I'll try writing a little bit.
Yep.
A few things that I noted. It said, 9 a.m., Sandy Spring Friends Meeting. In many ways, I feel like I found my kind of people here. We sit in silence, about a dozen of us, this particular group, my age, approximately. The only sound is a clock ticking at one end of the hall and the occasional far-off sound of an airplane in the distance. I'm watching light coming in through windows, dappled as it filters through leaves and branches before arriving at the glass panes. I admire the sense of mission for peace and for the stewardship of the earth, and especially, while not requiring a particular dogma, they recognize that of God in each human being.
That sounds consistent.
So you were doing journaling, and that is a spiritual practice that many Quakers practice today and have practiced over the years.
Yeah, well done, Pilgrim.
Yeah, so you weren't out of the norm at all.
Okay, well, good, good. There's a tradition for, there's a precedent for this.
I'm Stephen Cap Perry. You're listening to In Good Faith. Back with more in just a moment. There is power in stories. They inspire us. They help us see ways we might try doing things. And sometimes a story will even tell us not to go down that particular path. And it's nice to learn that from a story or a conversation before you experience it yourself. Hi, Stephen Cap Perry here from the In Good Faith podcast. I love stories because what they teach me about people, about God, about politics, about everything. And I hope you will check out the brand new podcast, Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. There is so much to learn from the stories of these guests because they are people who found themselves in an uncomfortable moment. They could have just left the situation, written off the people they disagreed with, but instead they made something beautiful out of it. And you can learn how, and I know you'll like the stories. This is hosted by Julie Rose, the host of Top of Mind. She does a great job, and I know you'll love the guests and their stories. Check out Uncomfy. This is In Good Faith. And today we're speaking with Rich and Joan Liversidge in Maryland from Sandy Spring Monthly Meeting from the Society of Friends, also known as Quakers, and about how they came to be part of this tradition.
I grew up in the Philadelphia area, which is a kind of a Quaker hotbed, although I knew nothing about Quakers at the time. I was originally in a Presbyterian church, but in the second or third grade, we joined an Episcopal church. And I grew up there. I sang in the boys' choir. When my voice changed and there wasn't room as an alto, I carried the cross coming in. So I was involved that way. But there was not a particular spiritual aspect to it. It was more what we did on Sunday, and the rest of the rest of my week was my own without a particular church flavor. I began worshiping with Quakers in the 1960s when I started to have doubts about the Vietnam War, and then re-emerged as a stronger Quaker when I was with Joan in the Washington, D.C. area in the early 1980s. And so really being a Quaker has stemmed from, I guess, 1981.
Thank you very much. How about you, Joan?
I grew up in South Jersey, across the river from where he was, but we didn't know each other then. And my family was Baptist, and my mother, I was an only child, still am. haven't adopted any siblings since. My mother took me to the Baptist church when we moved to a new town, and my parents didn't go to church. They dropped me off for Sunday school, and I found it very lonely and disconcerting, and I had four cousins who were Presbyterians. So I said to my mother, can I go to church with my cousins? And she said, yes. So I became a Presbyterian. Turns out that that side of the family has Presbyterian roots all the way back to Ireland that I have since found out about as I did genealogy work. So I maintained my Presbyterian membership, went to church mostly on my own, sang in the choir, helped out in the nursery. My parents went occasionally, got married in that church. And it was my first marriage. And the marriage ended in divorce. I was really disillusioned about everything, including my faith walk, my faith journey.
Right.
I had this experience, which I put into the terms of what I understand now in the Quaker faith and practice. I was in church one day reciting the Apostles' Creed. And the Quaker faith language would be, I was convicted by the light of Christ. At that moment, saying to myself, do you believe this? And the answer was, I don't know. And then the next one was, well, why are you standing here saying this? You're a hypocrite. Mm. I walked out. So that set me on a journey of being unchurched for several years. And in the early 80s, as Rich said, we were together at that point. I started to attend Quaker meeting, and my grandparents that had been on that Presbyterian church side were Quakers, but our families were a little estranged and I had very little contact with them or with Quakerism. But I had a draw to find out what this experience was, and I had a yearning for a spiritual community and a connection with God that hadn't been fulfilled for all those years. So I started to attend, and then Rich started to attend, and then we both became members and have stayed ever since. So it's a 40-plus year journey for us.
Wow. Rich, as you came to the meetings, what was it that felt at home there, or like this could be a spiritual home for you?
We are very different in a lot of ways. We are like one another in many. But in terms of that spiritual depth, I think I need to yield to Joan. I was pretty comfortable being unchurched. I didn't consider myself an Episcopalian or pretty much of anything. It was really the anti-war movement. I was the stock analyst for an investment firm at the time, and it seemed as though so much of what we were doing was money-focused rather than meaning-focused, and there was a disconnect. And I think what drew me to Radnor meeting in Philadelphia was an awareness that there is another side that is there to be discovered. And I think I had inklings of that, which was why I think I was ripe for moving into a Quaker community, a friend's community. But it wasn't so much as being led as sort of wandering and almost by accident and discovering it. I have told a number of people that it's very easy to make a first step into being a Quaker. But once you understand what is involved, it's really difficult to maintain it and to live it.
Tell me more about that. What aspect? What does it require of you?
Well, Quakers are pacifists. Not all are. In fact, even during the Revolutionary War, there were non-pacifist Quakers who were, in fact, read out of meeting. And close to Independence Square, there was a meeting for Quakers who had been read out of meeting because they fought in the Revolutionary War. So there's this long tradition of people understanding that is a conflict that we have to wrestle with. And when I was applying for membership at Friends Meeting of Washington in downtown D.C., I said, you need to understand I am not there as far as being a pacifist. And they said, well, are you working on it? Are you laboring with it? Which is a kind of a Quaker term. Are you laboring? And I said, oh, yeah. And they said, that's okay.
And you come still on are. In.
And I still wrestle with it. Yes. Even in our current environment, I wrestle with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Joan, I wonder if you would tell me what drew you once you were attending the meetings.
I have understood this more and more over the years, but early on it was because I still hadn't answered the questions that I had when I was reciting the Apostles' Creed. And so I came to this spiritual home and was accepted in my seeking without having answers. I was still in that moment of seeking what I believed about Jesus, about the Christ, Jesus as the Christ, as Savior. The amazing thing for me is that I came to know Christ in a way that I had never known before when I was in my early years of being Presbyterian. And so for us as Quakers, Christ is the inward light, the inward teacher spirit, the Pentecostal spirit that descended. It's present with us all the time. The challenge is to get in touch with it. That's a continual struggle, day in and day out, is getting in touch with that presence. So that's what drew me, and that's what's kept me. Although it's not easy, as Rich said, where we have differences in the way we worship, in our theology, and we split off from one another. So our humanness gets in the way all the time.
Well, I do think it's really lovely that someone who is working on or laboring with, that feels like a more natural spirituality to me to say, here's where I am, and I am trying to go down a road.
There is a biblical passage that has been sitting with me for several weeks. To me, it exemplifies what Quakerism, our contemplative. And it's from John, which is considered the Quaker gospel, for instance.
It's my favorite.
Yes, because it's very spirit-centered. And it's John 4:24, God is spirit, and those who worship him, her, must worship in spirit and truth. And that biblical passage has been with me yesterday in centering prayer. I found that that's where I went to that passage because I think that says what we do in worship.
That in spirit one, and in truth.
Yep, in spirit and truth. And you must worship in spirit and truth. Yeah, so, and how do you get there? And the way we get there is contemplative, waiting worship, instead of going in with an agenda. So, that's it.
That was Steve talking with Joan and Rich Liversidge about their experience with contemplative practices. I really loved their discussion of silence, and I'm thinking of when I'm listening to music in my earbuds and I'm outside and there's wind blowing and construction and cars zooming by, it's hard to hear the music unless I turn it up. But when I go inside and it's quiet, it's almost too loud. The music is really accessible and clear. And I think that, like they were saying, God manifests himself more when we are in stillness and silence.
Yeah, and I was really fascinated because they kept saying, and we'll hear this also with Danny Lee, God manifests to us when we're in community. I mean, it is about being silent. It's about being prepared to hear God, but also this idea that being together, where two or three are gathered,
yeah,
God will witness to us about his love. That's amazing.
These guys were a delightful couple. Right after the silent service, I stood up and we were not sitting far from each other. So I went over to shake their hand and they were so gracious that I just thought, okay, thank you, God. Here are our guests for this episode. And they were so charming. So thankful to them. They talked about self-emptying, but not like sitting there with nothing going on in your head. They were attentively listening. I think she said that something from the Holy Spirit was going to bubble up. And she used that phrase, inside her, that someone might want to share as a testimony or as a, I would say, a spiritual thought.
And I really appreciated this guidance because You know, in our own tradition, we have what we call testimony meeting. Anyone can get up and they can bear witness of how God is working in their lives. And I appreciate that storytelling aspect. But her recommendation that we wait until we feel grounded and we consider, and we don't necessarily fashion a story, because that's what I'm always doing. Okay, how do I make a story that's going to be really good? And I'm going to practice it in my head. They're going to laugh at this part. And then I'm going to get them with the tears in line three. Instead of doing that, just waiting for inspiration and then speaking the things that God would have me say.
So that brings me to this whole self-emptying in a really positive way. And what I'm happy about is it's not just meditation, period. It's meditation as worship. Thanks for tuning in to this first episode of our mini-series about meditation and contemplative silence, all in the service of worship. So grateful to Joan and Rich Liversidge for speaking with us. This episode was produced by me, Stephen Cap Perry, and Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Leah King, Katarina Martinich, Josh Orton, and James Sturtevant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Daniel Phillips, and Lauren Sandberg. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, be sure you leave a comment or review wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, that helps spread the word. And find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod, on Instagram and Facebook at InGoodFaithPodcast. Our YouTube address is youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here in Good Faith.